reading very technical stuff here. Canto 3, Chapter 5, texts 30 through 37. Maitreya is speaking to Vidura. It's the title of the chapter, Vidura's Talks with Maitreya. Vidura has placed a number of questions. Maitreya is beginning to respond. He's asked specifically about the Purusha avatar forms of the Lord. And he's asked for Maitreya to explain creation, but not just the technical part of how it happens, but specifically to show the interaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the verses that we're reading end, it's permeated with it, and it ends with a summary, where the unfolding of the elements out of Pradhan is the topic, and in each of the stages of the unfolding of the elements, there's the glance of the Supreme Lord, and the glance of the Supreme Lord, and the glance of the Supreme Lord. It's not just dominoes or mechanical cause and effect events. I forget which is which. There's terms deistic and theistic. And I think deistic is the idea that God creates and there's no ongoing interaction, and theistic is creates and there's ongoing interaction. So the point here is that there is ongoing interaction. Well, before the ongoing interaction, there's the manifesting of things. The manifesting of things is with the glance of the Supreme Lord. So I'll read the verses. We'll see where the discussion goes. It's technical. Not necessarily the favorite part of Srimad Bhagavatam for people who like Bhagavatam stories. Text 30. The false ego is transformed into the mind. The false ego is transformed into mind by interaction with the Lord of Goodness. All the demigods who control the phenomenal world are also products of the same principle, namely the interaction of false ego and the mode of goodness. Purport. False ego, interacting with the different modes of material nature, is the source of all materials in the phenomenal world. So what happened previously is Pradhan, we'll keep it short, Pradhan was glanced over by Lord Vishnu, and the agitation of Pradhan, the undifferentiated total material substance, resulted in false ego coming, because you can't have material activity without false ego. So false ego being manifest, interacting with various modes of nature, along with the continued glance of the Lord, then other things started to happen. So the first thing that happens is false ego interacting with the mode of goodness manifests or becomes transformed into our dear friend. The mind. And mentioned here also is the demigods, the controllers of what's going to be created later by Lord Brahma. They're manifest in the same way or following the same principle. Text 31. The senses are verily products of the mode of passion in false ego, and therefore philosophical speculative knowledge and fruitive activities are predominantly products of the mode of passion. This is chapter 5 of Canto 3, and in chapter 25 or 26, a different presentation is made, and I haven't had time to research why this apparent cut. This is Maitreya's presentation later in this canto. It's Lord Kapila Dev's presentation. They say something a little different. False ego in contact with the mode of passion. In Kapila Dev's presentation, it manifests material intelligence. And here, it's manifesting the senses, speculative knowledge, and fruitive activities. False ego in contact with the mode of passion. Fruitive activities makes complete sense. Mode of passion, fruitive activities. Speculative knowledge makes complete sense. It's like the essence is taking one away. The essence of speculative knowledge, even if the purported intent of speculative knowledge is to reach God, it takes one away from God. Or as Prabhupada writes in the purport, the chief function of the false ego is godlessness. Speculative knowledge can't take one to godliness, or can't take one to God. The people that are prone to speculative knowledge think otherwise. It's getting them closer to God. Prabhupada continues, when a person forgets his constitutional position as an eternally subordinate part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and wants to be happy independently, he functions mainly in two ways. Well, he's going to describe sense gratification and specifically mental speculation that takes one to the conclusion that I'm God. First, he attempts to act fruitively for personal gain or sense gratification, and after attempting such fruitive activities for a considerable time, when he is frustrated, he becomes a philosophical speculator and thinks himself to be on the same level as God. This false idea of becoming one with the Lord is the last snare of the illusory energy, which traps a living entity into the bondage of forgetfulness under the spell of false ego. So that's a clear explanation of why speculative knowledge is one of the forms of godlessness. Because the person who's doing the speculating is a priori. He's already in a position of being in the material world, which means he's forgotten his identity, part and parcel of God. He's forgotten God. And now, within that framework, he's speculating. What's he going to come up with? He's disconnected from God, and God doesn't exist. So even if there's a concept that comes out of speculation, the frame, the gestation ground is going to predetermine the outcome. One where God doesn't exist. So if I come up with an idea of God, then whatever that idea of God is, it's the real God. It's just been like factored out, and some other idea displaces it. Up to the point of I'm God, you're God, or becoming one with God by mental speculation. This false idea of becoming one with the Lord is the last snare of the illusory energy, which traps a living entity into the bondage of forgetfulness under the spell of the false ego. Then there's an alternative, the next paragraph. The best means of liberation from the clutches of false ego is to give up the habit of philosophical speculation regarding the absolute truth. One should know definitely that the absolute truth is never realized by the philosophical speculations of the imperfect, egoistic person. Prabhupada's very precise and very heavy. I'll read it again. One should know definitely that the absolute truth is never realized by the philosophical speculations of the imperfect, egoistic person. The absolute truth, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is realized by hearing about him in all submission and love from the bona fide authority who is a representative of the 12 great authorities mentioned in the Bhagavatam. By such an attempt only can one conquer the illusory energy of the Lord, although for others she is unsurpassable, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:14. The verse isn't spelled out, but it's one struggles very hard with material nature, but one who surrenders to the Supreme Lord can cross beyond. The next set of verses, they're related, and they're very short purports. So after mind, and then senses, fruitive activity, and philosophical speculation comes sky. Text 32. The sky is a product of sound, and sound is the transformation of egoistic passion. In other words, the sky is the symbolic representation of the Supreme Soul. Purport. In the Vedic hymns it is said, Etasmat atmanak akasha sambhutaha. The sky is the symbolic representation of the Supreme Soul. Those who are egoistic in passion and ignorance cannot conceive of the personality of Godhead. For them, the sky is the symbolic representation of the Supreme Soul. Short purport. You know, amazing statement in a very short purport. But the indication that the sky is the symbolic representation of the Supreme Soul however succinctly, it's saying that this is for the persons who are egoistic in passion and ignorance. And since they cannot conceive of the personality of Godhead, an impersonal representation of Him in the form of the all-pervasive sky within material creation. Is their symbolic representation of the Supreme Soul. Okay. Thereafter, the personality of Godhead glanced over the sky, partly mixed with eternal time and eternal energy, and thus developed the touch sensation, which the air in the sky from which the air in the sky was produced. Again, I preface, this is all very technical. Purport. All material creations take place from subtle to gross. The entire universe has developed in that matter. From the sky developed the touch sensation, which is a mixture of eternal time, the external energy, and the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The touch sensation developed into the air in the sky. Similarly, all other gross matter also developed from subtle to gross. Sound developed into sky, touch developed from air, form developed from into fire, taste developed into water, and smell developed into earth. Continuing, text 34. Thereafter, the extremely powerful air interacting with the sky generated the form of sense perception, and the perception of form transformed into electricity. So if you want to have an electric generating plant, here's how to get one. The Sanskrit word is jyoti, but Prabhupada has translated it consistently as electricity. The light to see the world. When electricity was recharged in the air and was glanced over by the Supreme at that time by a mixture of eternal time and external energy, there occurred the creation of water and taste. Text 36. Thereafter, the water produced from electricity was glanced over by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and mixed with eternal time and external energy. Thus, it was transformed into the earth, which is qualified primarily by smell. So that's where earth comes from. A little bit of electricity, plus eternal time, plus the external energy, stir it up, you get the earth. Right. Purport. From the descriptions of the physical elements in the above verses, it is clear that in all stages the glance of the Supreme is needed, with the other additions and alterations. In every transformation, the last finishing touch is the glance of the Lord, who acts as a painter does when he mixes different colors to transform them into a particular color. When one element mixes with another, the number of its qualities increases. For example, The sky is the cause of air. The sky has one quality, namely sound. But by the interaction of the sky with the glance of the Lord, mixed with eternal time and eternal nature, the air is produced, which has two qualities, sound and touch. Similarly, after the air is created, interaction of sky and air, touched by time and the external energy of the Lord, produces electricity. And after the interaction of electricity with air and sky, mixed with time, external energy, and the Lord's glance over them, the water is produced. In the final stage of sky, there is one quality, namely sound. In air, two qualities, sound and touch. In electricity, three qualities, sound, touch, form. In water, there are four qualities, sound, touch, form, and taste. And in the last stage of physical development, the result is earth, which has all five qualities, sound, touch, form, taste, and smell. Although there are different mixtures of different elements, such mixtures do not take place automatically, just as a mixture of colors does not take place automatically without the touch of the living painter. The automatic system is factually activated by the glancing touch of the Lord. Living consciousness is the final word in all physical changes. This fact is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 9.10 as follows: Maya Dyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharasharam Hetu Nani Nikonte Ajagat Viparivartate. The conclusion is that the physical elements may work very wonderfully to a layman's eyes, but their workings actually take place under the supervision of the Lord. Those who can mark only the changes of the physical elements and cannot perceive the hidden hand of the Lord behind them are certainly less intelligent persons, although they may be advertised as great material scientists. And the last, without a purport, is text 37. O gentle one, this is Maitreya to Vidura, of all the physical elements, beginning from the sky down to the earth, all the inferior and superior qualities are due to only the final touch of the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which Prabhupada has already explained very nicely. For a scientist that knows about this subject matter, it would probably be very fascinating read. For the rest of us, it's very technical, but by Srila Prabhupada's purports, he's taken out what's important for us to capture. One is subtle to gross. The manifesting of creation is done in that method. Engineering-wise, it's very practical. Something within the subtle, that the gross form is accessible but not manifest, or present but not manifest. And to make it manifest, you need a cause, a trigger. And you press the button, the glance of the Lord, and the subtle manifests the next grosser form, that next grosser form interacting with the prior subtle, with the glance of the Lord, manifests the next grosser form, the next grosser form with the prior subtle form, and the more subtle form with the glance of the Lord. And the nurturing components of the total material energy in the next grosser form, like that. And the process of annihilation works in reverse. The grosser form sublimates itself into the more subtle form, sublimates and just collapses back into a very compact, subtle, unmanifest state of the total material substance. So, unfolding and imploding, or evolving, devolving of the elements. And of course, there's living entities who the whole mission or purpose behind the creation is so that they, that's previously stated by Maitreya. It's an intent by the Supreme Lord to provide those living entities with an opportunity to rectify themselves so that from their spirit of rebellion. So with that in mind, then there has to be a user's manual. There has to be a way that the living entities can interact with the creation in such a way that rectification of the rebellious spirit takes place. But supposing people don't look at the user's manual, they don't have any sense of Dharma or the purpose of life, they're in the default mode. It's sense gratification and speculation, thinking that's the program. And thus they become implicated in the complexities of material existence. And suffer the consequences. And when it comes to dealing with the consequences, it becomes more of the same. What fruitive activities can I do, or what speculative knowledge can I come up with that will relieve me of the consequences? The suffering condition, and thus become more implicated. Even if that speculation mentioned in Prabhupada's purport is speculating in the direction of I am equal to God, or of I am one with God, so you somehow God appears back in the picture again, although he just got, locked out. It's a philosophized sense of oneness with the Supreme, because the factual sense of oneness with the Supreme has also been explained, where qualitatively one, but we're the servant, quantitatively different. Our position is the servant. So taking up the position of being the servant of the Supreme, that's the means of liberation from that circle, perpetuating circle, cycle. I'll read again. The absolute truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is realized by hearing about Him in all submission and love from a bona fide authority, who is a representative of the 12 great authorities mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. By such an attempt only can one conquer the illusory energy of the Lord, although for others she is unsurpassable. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.14. So, in Rupa Goswami's language, just taking what's here directly, text 31 from the Bhagavatam, Rupa Goswami has described devotional service precisely in these terms, that where devotional service is that which is favorable to the Supreme Lord, and absent are speculative knowledge and fruitive activity. Jnana karma jnavritam. And that means no contact with the mode of passion, because false ego in the mode of passion generates speculative knowledge and fruitive activities. So how can we, once contaminated by the mode of passion, how can we become free from the mode of passion? It's not easy. Fruitive activities. Philosophical speculation. We certainly want to know what's what and what's right, what's wrong. We want knowledge. It's natural for the soul because part of our constitutional position. And we want happiness, it's part of our constitutional position. But to define knowledge in terms of speculation, or to define happiness in terms of sense gratification through fruitive activity, that's the modes of nature. But that stain is very strong. The impression upon the soul is very strong. And so the tendency is to take that into the realm of devotional service. Understanding through whatever capacity we have for speculative knowledge, false ego born of, or in contact with the mode of passion, speculative knowledge and fruitive activity, or combination, and that the package is supposed to be happiness. Devotional service means letting go of that, not just conception, but that strong tendency, because we can agree to the conception and still hold on to the tendency. It reminds me of Srila Prabhupada being asked by a reporter, "Swamiji, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious?" And Prabhupada's answer was, "Less than a moment." And in that less than a moment, one only has to do two things. Discard tendency for fruitive activity, and discard tendency for mental speculation. Then he concluded that generally people are very attached to these things, and therefore the process is gradual. So in that gradual evolving of the process, there has to be, if we want to progress, there has to be a letting go progressively more and more of such tendency, speculative knowledge, and fruitive activity. But for that to happen, the positive shelter, what's going to take that place? If I let go of those things, what's going to fill that space? Anukulyena Krishna Mushilana. Acting simply for the satisfaction of the Personality of Godhead, following the previous great authorities. And with that also, the concepts that they share, we internalize those concepts. They become concepts that we operate with. Understanding the world, understanding ourselves, understanding our duties, our relationships with others in terms of the spiritual conception. The absolute truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is realized by hearing about Him in all submission and love from the bona fide authority who is a representative of the 12 great authorities mentioned in the Bhagavatam. By such an attempt only can one conquer the illusory energy of the Lord, although for others she is unsurpassable as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.14. So those are some of the important things that are striking. There's one other. With the success of unfolding is not only the elements unfold, but the object of the sense also unfolds. Sound, form, sound, smell, form, taste, and touch, and sequence. So within, it's not, the language is a little, again, different than what Kapila Dev says, or how he expresses it. Here it's that sound produces sky, and here's the language. The sky is a product of sound. But other language says, along with sky comes sound, and sound is carried within the sky, or it's contained within the sky. But here's the language. The sky is a product of sound, and sound is the transformation of egoistic passion. So it sounds, the expression appears to say it's chronological in the following sequence. False ego in contact with passion, sound, sky, and then sky glanced over by the Supreme Lord in contact with material time and the external energy, then air. So here is air comes first, and then thereafter the extremely powerful air interacting with sky generated form. Thereafter the personality God had glanced over the sky, partly mixed with eternal time and external energy, and thus developed touch sensation. So here it sounds like sound and sky, sound and then sky, then air and then touch. Anyway. And there's no purports to clarify. In Kapila Dev's discussion, it's along with the element comes the object of the senses. With sky comes sound, with air comes touch. With fire comes form, or sight, perception of form. taste and then smell. Okay, a little chewy. Any discussion?
I want to understand the difference between the kind of liberation which is like merging into the absolute truth, which is the Sahajya Mukti, versus the philosophized sense of oneness that is being indicated. Is there
a difference between that and what?
And so philosophized sense of oneness is something which is considered to be not factual, but it's like
that's
just
correct.
But the other one is considered to be a factual process, like a valid stage of liberation, which is Sahajya kind. So what is the difference between the two?
One's material and the other's spiritual. One's born of the mind, and that's all it is. It doesn't go beyond an imagined state. And another is merging and entering into the Brahma-jyoti without spiritual form, without spiritual activity, entering into the Brahma-jyoti. Say it in reverse. What is the Brahma-jyoti? One way of defining or describing the Brahma-jyoti is countless numbers of teeming living entities who are with their individuality suspended but existing very tightly in that jyoti, the effulgence of the Lord. Because he's a comical person, Pridhan Andaraj likened it to a football game. And they get the ball down to the near the goal line, and they line up and they give the ball to the fullback. They have all these players, and you know, somebody in there is holding the ball. All this merge of bodies. Something like that. Or years ago in college days, they had contests to see how many people they could fit in a telephone booth. Now they don't even have telephone booths. But for privacy, they had telephone booths. So how many students can fit into a telephone booth? And that's like the Brahma-jyoti. You can't tell who's who and what's what. Indistinguishable. So Brahma-jyoti is where individuality is suspended and one is in that state of oneness, of in neutrality. There's no activity. There's no expression of individuality. So the material side is suspended and the spiritual side is not fully activated, but it's in this neutral state. And philosophized is just going for a ride on the platform, whatever. The minds travel here and there.
So in the first case, like, the mental speculation is done with a clear conception, and in the other case, the mental speculation is done with material conception. Because the mental speculation is the process for attaining that stage of merging into the...
Well, without contact, you recall this from the last verse of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita in the purport. There's no question of using the word yoga without some devotion. There's no meaning to it. So speculation alone is not the means. Speculation is just going for a ride. Where there's connection with the Supreme in devotion, some mix of devotion, that's the So without this acceptance of the Supreme, in some, however watered down or indirect or diluted form, there's no question of merging into the Brahmajyoti. It's just fruitless mental speculation. The example is given, the working with the husks after the grain has already been removed. What benefit does one get? No benefit, just the labor itself. No benefit. Yeah.
So for us devotees, in the process of self-realization, what is the danger of realizing Brahmajyoti and kind of getting stuck over there?
We'll be rescued. You know, as long as we don't read literature composed by mental speculators and, you know, become attracted to the concept of merging, because our Vaishnava acharyas will protect us from that. Again and again and again and again and again, and give us the personal conception. So, where, as long as there's the personal conception, there's no chance of entering into the, you know, into that error of Brahmajyoti merging. It's clearly the conception is service, using the material facilities at present. And in the spiritual, in the liberated state, continuing with spiritual form, serving, it's, you know, the servitor and the served. That's protection.
So it's like a shortcut for us,
yeah,
to bypass all those stages,
yes,
of gradual self-realization. So for a person who is stuck in the conception of oneness, or even being equal to God, or a person who does not accept personal feature of God, what is the best way to help such a person? What?
Give them prasadam.
But if the person is remote?
The person is what?
Remote?
Pray for them? I mean, if they're remote, what are you going to do? Send them some Prabhupada's books?
Yeah, I'm talking about, do you remember Roman?
Yeah.
So at some point he started reading too many of the books. And what happened to him is, like, he called me once and all of a sudden he's going to travel through the space and he eternal and one with God and all those concepts. So, and so deeply rooted that at some point I just gave up on him.
Yeah. Well, once one drinks poison, it's pretty hard. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Chaitanya Charitamrita also agonized over the fact that such persons are very difficult to rescue. He entered into the assembly of such persons with Prakashananda Saraswati as the chief person and transformed just by his divine potency. So become divinely potent and maybe even help those people. although, you know, it's much easier with persons that may be saturated with sense gratification than somebody that's taken shelter of a impersonal conception. The more subtle, that contamination is more difficult. It's more insidious. The disease is more severe. Yeah.
Maharaj, I was just curious to know about the people who are into mind-body work, those who have met the last few months, it appears that they have certain principles, but mostly their approach to solutions of life is speculation, if they... So just curious to know, how is it that, because it appears to be true, like it makes sense and it appears to be true, and more than truth, it like when we apply, it just feels right. So how is it that their speculation is so...
Say the whole sentence out. So how is it that their speculation
is making sense, or is it it's something we... Like, I'm feeling it as truth.
What's the difference between reflected light and direct light? I see some light. Or it's partial. Or it's partial in the sense that it's a reflection of something. Rabindra Sarup Prabhu, being the philosopher PhD that he is, he describes it in this way. There's a big pie called the Absolute Truth, and somebody comes along with a little slice of that big pie, and they wiggle it, and it makes other things wiggle because it's part of this big pie. Mm-hmm. They go, wow, that then becomes their religion. They built the whole thing around that slice. But the two things, it's not the whole pie, and who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead without the shelter, the ashraya of the whole thing? It all, it's a zero. Well, why does it sound right? Because it's a disconnected part of the truth. And you can apply principles that give you some experience because it's a principle. It does something. So you go, wow, if it works. It's a great misfortune for those persons and those who hear from those persons that don't have shelter in the Personality of Godhead, and they think that's truth, or that, the conventional term that's used these days is that's spirituality. Or they're a spiritual person. Because there's the mode of goodness, which is rare in this world, and there's this little slice of the big pie that's disconnected from the Supreme. And they're gifted how to use it. But the principle, going back to the Bhagavatam, is born of speculation. It's godlessness. That's the starting point. It's not going to be a different ending point. Anyway, so that's not your question. Your question is, why does it appear to have some efficacy? Put a one in front of it, it does. Minus the one in front of it, there's some reflection of truth, just like light reflected in the mirror. Step back and say, why does this world appear to be, why does the body appear to be alive? How can we have the idea that the body is alive without the soul, and what to speak of the Supreme Soul? And you can say so many things about the body, and the push pulls of the body, and it works. Look at the wonders of modern medicine, the atheists will say. Look at the wonderful things that we're able to do. Anyway. So there's something. But it's not the whole picture. Where's the shelter of the personality of Godhead? That's so we don't. Like anything of this world, if we don't have the association of a pure devotee, what are we going to do? Live like a hermit? Go to a cave and have nothing to do with anybody unless you're a pure devotee? So we have to become somewhat swan-like, taking nectar even from a filthy place. Unless the world is filled with pure devotees, we can associate without that same reservation. Something more?
I have a follow-up on this. My understanding is that, like, in Krishna consciousness, we try to control our mind when it is like in the roller coaster ride by some higher engagement. But this approach is where we get some perspective of what is happening so that we are aware, there is more awareness. But the concern that I have is, like, firstly for me, I have this analyzing tendency, like a speculating tendency, like, which is strong. So I was just wondering if that is feeding on to, you know,
perhaps.
Although that helps, but...
Perhaps. Perhaps it's just feeding the disease itself in the name of a cure. So the remedy is just make sure that the personality of Godhead is strongly connected. Read Srimad Bhagavatam regularly. The perspective of the whole thing with spiritual connection. And then, you know, speculative tendency in relation to the Bhagavatam is pacified and purified. And then continuing with whatever other association and activity I have besides reading Srimad Bhagavatam, that, you know, there'll be such a sharp contrast in what that experience is, the speculative tendency that's born of, you know, the modes of nature on material subject matters. It's not satisfying to the heart. And the other is very satisfying to the heart. So, as you said, higher engagement. But there's also, you know, the flip side. Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. It's accepting that which is favorable, but it would also rejecting that which is unfavorable. And to live in a, that those are principles of surrender, to live a life where the principles of surrender are operating. You know, we're in this world, and we just can't shut it off. There's accepting of something and rejecting of something while we're moving about. You know, cloister ourselves off, you know, not Lord Chaitanya's process. It, this higher taste and letting go of the other tendency, using it positively and not engaging it negatively. Because that means, you know, more of the same. That's not what we want. Another birth, another time around. Well, thank you. Something else? Yes?
Guru Maharaj, when we say that the process of understanding the Absolute Truth is by hearing, to say modern scientists, they hear it as, okay, stop all scientific endeavor, or, you know, exploratory spirit. I'm wondering, is one of the purposes of this kind of technical information given in Bhagavatam and other literature to do science or technology in the mode of goodness? Like, is that something
not
that can
exactly.
be...
It's it's a couple things. It's the world is made up of all types of people, mm-hmm. and some of those all types of people are people that have they want to understand the push and pull of things.
Right.
They're technical minded. They like. They're not so interested in stories. They're interested in the technical push and pull of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, in part, not the only reason, but in part, that's there so that when they take a look at, well, is it this or is it that? Is it God created, or is it that matter created, independent of God? And they're serious and open in that investigation. So along comes somebody that's a creationist that doesn't have an explanation. They just say, God said, and so it was, and it was good. Like, you know, that's not satisfying for them.
Mm-hmm.
They just dismiss it. Because over here is something that's atheistic, and it happened this way, and they can do all the math and physics. And so this is, the Bhagavatam is for all types of people, including that type of people. So it's scientific. It's not only a blind faith that says God created, but here's how it happened. And it's another is it's one of his glories. It's his energies being manifested for a specific purpose. Not whimsical. If there's a very specific purpose behind it. So, from Maitreya's, excuse me, from Vidura's perspective, it's amplifying the glories of the Lord. But it's not just like a dovetail for the propensity of researchers.
Mm.
From the devotional point of view, from Vidura's point of view, he's not interested. Maharaj Pariksit similarly asks the second canto. He's about to die. He's not like doesn't want a class in what's the push and pull of the creation. He's interested in the Supreme Lord, and similarly Vidura. So, the higher level is it's just one of the glories of the Lord. It's one of his unlimited glories. And how are we going to understand what's beyond what's in our purview if we can't properly understand what's in our purview, the glory of the Lord? It doesn't make sense. Or we won't. But if we can, by understanding that which is all around us, the material energy, you know, look any direction, this material energy. And what's the connection of that with the Supreme Lord? What's the glory of the Lord here? It's intangible, but it's recognizable by the hearing process. So it's there for that purpose. And the other one that I mentioned. All types of people make up this world. Some of those are, this is connecting those to the Supreme Lord. It's a little bit like when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya spent 7 days explaining Vedanta Sutra to Lord Chaitanya, who just remained silent. And the eighth day he was frustrated, saying, I don't know if you're understanding, not understanding what's going on. Speak something. Do you understand? Lord Chaitanya replied, I understand Vedanta Sutra, but your explanation is clouding the meaning every sentence you speak, more and more. Oh. Well, if you understand Vedanta Sutra, can you explain it to me? What is your understanding? Let me examine. And as he explained, he not only understood Vedanta Sutra, but he understood the person that's presenting this, because he's super scholar. The person that's presenting this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's how he realized. Not just the information content, but his intellectual acumen, hearing from Lord Chaitanya, allowed him to understand Lord Chaitanya is the Personality of Godhead. He came to that conclusion and declared it. And Lord Chaitanya smiled and showed his spiritual form of Sadbhuj. So, that's an illustration of this broader point. The world is made up of all kinds of different people, different types of people. So one type is persons that, you know, the lineages of kings, and the pastime portion is less attractive. This is more attractive for some people. And it connects them. It connects that tendency with the absolute truth.
So, Guru Maharaj, if I understand you correctly, so for those persons who are inclined to understanding the pushes and pulls, it seems like there is not room for them in, like, say, Bhagavata culture. Rather, they would have to align them.
Now here it is. Sankhya philosophy. Romper room for those guys. But, you know, there's the Personality of Godhead at every step, at every step, at every step, at every step, at every step. And here's his hand. Not just the pushes and pulls.
So if they understand the glory of the Lord, then they could apply that knowledge for the benefit of the world?
Yeah. Exactly like the Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya example. Exactly. He used that prowess that he had. He was the most learned person, next to Lord Chaitanya, on the planet. He was the chief priest scholar of the Maharaj Prataparudra. He had thousands of sannyas disciples. No, he was big time personality. And all of that, it was a bunch of zeros. let's put a one in front of it, you know, great value in service to the world. So propensities are not a problem. Atheism is the problem. Someone may be a street sweeper, someone may be an intellectual, someone may be this and that and the other thing. Propensity isn't a discredit or a credit. Atheism is a discredit. It's a zero, whatever it is. Mayaya pratigyana asarin bhavamashita.
So we don't say scientific spirit is useless.
No.
It could be.
This is science.
Properly.
You know, some people don't like science, but some people like science, and this is a fascinating science.
I remember when one of your presentations where you show the relativity of this material world, and you are giving an example that here on the earth you look up to see the moon, then if you, let's say, flew to moon, then again you look up, not down, to see the earth. Yes. So a couple of weeks ago I was imagining that I'm, you know, when the airplane takes off, okay, you look down to the earth. So you look down, and let's say the airplane goes up, 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 up. At some point, when I reach the space, outer space, then the meaning of up and down ceases to exist. It's only relative to my body. If I'm on the earth and within certain realm, that under those conditions, the up, down, left, right makes sense. But at some point, being in the space, there is no up and down, left or right. So it is only relative to my body.
Well, you say body, you said point of perception or frame of perception.
So this is telling me that anything that is analyzed by my mind in this material world is conditional and only temporary because of my position, and it's true at this because of the condition. So this is telling me that the trust given to my mind should be limited.
Yes. Here's what, from something that both of you are saying, Rupa Goswami says, while on the one hand, the other hand, on the one hand, we reject mental speculation. But what we reject is mental speculation that leads to such a conclusion. However, on the other hand, mental speculation that results in the conclusion that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we utilize that. For example, Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami is analyzing, using rational faculty, which is, you know, mind and intelligence, which is the best means of knowing Krishna. And he uses his rational faculty to prove to his audience, along with scriptural statements, hearing, mental speculation and sense perception are imperfect, so I reject them. But I'm using my mental faculties to reject them, to come to the right conclusion, just hearing. And then the question, okay, which of the opportunities to hear, which of them is best? Using rational faculty, scriptural authority, but also rational faculty to understand what the scripture is saying. So we're unavoidably, we have a mind, so we're using it. How you use it is going to determine whether it's a one or a zero. So Now what you said was definitely limit, you know, the information and the conclusions based upon that information that come from the mind, because it's imperfect and it's, you know, it's relative to the point of like I had this presentation at University of California in Davis, where part of the presentation I was making, I was on Mysteries of the Sacred Universe. Part of the presentation was, it doesn't really matter whether the universe is geocentric or heliocentric. It's a matter of your point of perception. And there was a fellow in the audience that said, no, it's either one or the other. And I'm not attached to it being one or the other, but it's either one or the other. So, you know, why are you attached to it being one or the other? Because it's got to be one or the other. It can't be, it doesn't matter. Why does it have to be one or the other? It's not relative. Because there's a way that everything is. It either is, and that's another way of explaining what is, but it is this or it is that. Like, you know, he was, got derailed the whole presentation on that point. In theoretical physics, you know, it's contrary to what this fellow was saying, it does depend upon the observer whether light is a particle or light is a wave, for example. It depends on, you will perceive according to your, you know, the disposition of the perceiver. Anyway. So it's limited what we, the value we place within the mind, but at the same time we use it. So best to use it where, with careful. It's like this, the little book that Tamal Krishnamurti wrote, Faith and Reason. We use our reason to establish what we place our faith in. But we also use our reason to say, reason alone is not going to get me to where I want to go. Therefore, with reason, I'm withdrawing my faith and my reasoning faculty and placing my faith in something that's beyond my reasoning faculty.
Prabhupada, just add to that conversation. Stephen Hawking, in his new book, Grand Design, he actually talks about this point about what is reality.
Yes.
Very much depends on the frame of reference.
Yes.
So one of the paragraphs he says, people think that Copernicus disproved Ptolemy's model, but actually that's not true. Both models
are valid.
Are valid because it's just different frames of reference.
Yeah. And if Stephen Hawking says it, then it must be true, right?
Well, then the book, he dismisses God because he says, to explain creation, all that, God is not needed. Previously he used to say, I want to understand the mind of God, but in his new book he said that his conclusion after many years of research is God is not needed to explain anything.
Yeah, no, there's been discussion about his latest program. Okay. Thank you very much. Shiva Prabhupada, Ki Jai.